gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. 'Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life. 'Cause I can't stop the war.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on the Facts. My guest today is Kevin Galilei, an author and historian and the founder and director of the Center for Global Consciousness. Kevin is the most informed and experienced influential expert in the world on the United Nations global depopulation agenda and socially engineered genocide used all over the world since 1945. His most notable accomplishment was in 2012 when he exposed for the first time in the UN's history the various methods employed by the UN delegated global depopulation policy and showed the objectives are carried out to undermine human fertility and as a substitute to war. He also revealed the chemical and biological methods used by the depopulation lobby and executive branches of governments, as well as the psychosocial and economic methods imposed on the world's people to subvert the family structure. The UN system also relies on health threats to manufacture fear against fake pandemics such as the bird flu or swine flu, Ebola, or the Zika virus, and that fear is used to manufacture pesticides, drugs, and vaccines to induce sterility and increase morbidity. This socially engineered genocide is happening with the full knowledge and consent of the religious authorities around the world, including the Catholic Church. In a recent 75-day hunger strike in Rome, Kevin appealed to Pope Francis to speak the truth and deliver us from evil. The nearly seven decades of using chemical and biological agents have succeeded in preventing the birth of 2 billion children and have caused the premature deaths of at least 500 million people. I've posted many of Kevin's videos and interviews on my Facebook page for people interested in learning more about this topic. He is the author of several books, including Peace Without Poison and the Future of Global Governments, which can be purchased online. Listeners can also read his downloadable book called Killing Us Softly, Cancer and Consequences of the Global Depopulation Policy. The main difficulty in stopping this depopulation agenda, in America at least, is the resistance of the people to believe that this evil program exists and to accept what is being done to all of us. I only learned about the depopulation agenda a couple of years ago, but I have been researching the reality of this topic ever since. I'll bring Kevin on now. I'm very happy to have him on again and have him explain how chemtrails, vaccines, drugs, endocrine disruptors, and man-made pandemics are being used to sterilize and sicken us by preventing births and increasing deaths, tackle the population problem at both ends of life. Welcome to the show, Kevin. I'm so happy to have you back.
Hi, Evelyn. Well, thank you for inviting me back. I think this is our third or fourth interview, if I'm correct.
I think it's the fourth or the fifth.
Yes.
It's been a while.
And the timing couldn't be better because in a few days, precisely on May 8th, I will be heading to Brussels to take on the big boys once again, namely NATO this time for their role in the geoengineering program, the chemtrailing, which is, of course, also a method of population control in addition to being a method of climate change mitigation, and to take on the European commissioners because they are standing in the way of the removal of some 300 depopulation poisons that are in our food system, in our beverages, water, cosmetic, and consumer products. So there's a big battle ahead, and it appears that for the last 6 years I have engaged in at least one big battle, and this time I'll be heading to Brussels, which is, of course, a center of the globalists and global governance and intercontinental government, if you want, because it is the seat of the EU. The parliament is there as well. The big decisions are made in Brussels.
You're in Romania now, right?
Yes, I am. I have been here for more than 8 months now, I believe. I've lost track. And I have, I'm a native, of course, and I still have citizenship, hold dual citizenship, Canadian and Romanian. And I have a very good support system here. And it is also very cheap to live in Romania. And that suits me fine. And I can, of course, my work, I can do this from anywhere on Earth. It doesn't matter where I am. I could be in Timbuktu as long as I have an internet connection that works. I can do my work. Yes. You know, I don't know if you had any specific topics you wanted to talk about, but what I wanted to do first, if you agree, is to explain to our listeners, you know, the three big battles that we face in the world today. And then to talk about a little bit about what I intend to do in Brussels and why exactly I'm going there and what my strategy is for you know, making this action a success. What do you think?
Yes. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I am so grateful that that you're willing to come on and talk about this, you know, because it is such a hard topic to explain to people. So to have the top expert in the world come on, I am so proud and happy to have you on, Kevin. Yes, you go ahead and explain it.
It is a hard topic for several reasons. Now that you mentioned this, I should address it. First of all, it requires a steep learning curve. There's a lot to know. You have to understand the entire global system and the world we live in. So you have to open your eyes and study the facts and be able to memorize all these things and put them all together, this huge puzzle, and keep them all, you know, in order, so to say. Secondly, there's the psychological factor. The reality is brutal, and most people simply are not psychologically equipped or emotionally equipped to deal with this brutal reality. They have, you know, a hard time dealing with their own simple individual lives. And having to confront, you know, the global issues that seem so overwhelming and so beyond the reach of individuals is something that the vast majority of people I've come to understand do not want to confront. So therefore, they do not want to know. They want to live in the illusion. They want to, you know, to be limited to their own spheres within the family and community, and that's it. They're simply, they shut themselves out to any of this information, even though it is crucial that we all face it, because there are only two ways of addressing these huge global problems. That is, you know, either the top-down way, which is the one that is being done to us now by our governments and the UN system and the military-industrial complex, and they can only do it through brutal methods, and that's what they're doing, or there's the bottom-up way, you know, the grassroots way, where we simply change our behavior and we assume responsibilities that until now we as individuals have not had to assume, and then we can solve these problems, you know, before they even arise at source, so to say. So these are the two methods, which is why it is so crucially important that everybody faces the reality, opens their eyes, and does their part. But let me give an overall picture of the huge problems that the three battlefronts in the world today, because that it's a summary that will allow people to have, you know, the big picture, and then they can understand what exactly I intend to accomplish in Brussels and why I'm going there. So the three battlefronts in the world today are the most important one, because it affects all 7.3 billion of us. Nobody can hide from it. Is the depopulation front, or the population control front. The second one is the globalization front, or the resource and wealth sharing. And the third one is the decarbonization front, or the transition from fossil fuels to renewable energy sources. And I will say a few words for each and one of them, because you know, depopulation is still unknown entity to many people, and globalization is completely misunderstood, and decarbonization is a fairly new and very technical subject. So what is depopulation? Well, it is the effort to stop the human population from growing and doubling every 20 to 30 years, which has been, you know, the history of mankind, and as it would continue to do unless it is interfered with. And the goal is to stabilize the global population at a sustainable level, which has been calculated to be around 4 billion, given our consumption patterns and technology. So they want to reduce the population to about 4 billion, maybe even lower, and the sooner the better. And that's what they're trying to do. So this depopulation battle rages basically between the 1% or the elites, governing class, who are responsible for, you know, poisoning humanity into extinction out of desperation and for benevolent reasons, but nevertheless, you know, this is a horrendous outcome for the vast majority of us. And then there are the 99%, you know, the we the people, who now have found out about this program due to my work and sacrifices, and who are slowly awakening to this frightening reality that we are poisoned into extinction by our own elected governments, the UN system and the military industrial complex, with the blessing of our religious leaders who have sanctioned the depopulation genocide by giving secular authorities their tacit approval to damage fertility so long as it is in the process of healing disease. Now, this system of depopulation by stealth, which triggered a culture of death, was agreed upon by the leaders of the Western world before the end of the Second World War, and was enshrined in the international system with the formation of the UN, the United Nations, in 1945. And ever since, this covert program of population control, or depopulation in the meantime, constitutes one of only two wheels of this axis that makes the matrix of global control, the other wheel being the program of coerced globalization. How does it work, this depopulation program? Well, governments approve a fast, a median, or a slow trajectory to stable populations. The military-industrial complex conceives the poisons by which fertility and immunity are undermined, so as to birth and accelerate deaths as needed from country to country. The UN system keeps track of progress and coordinates the program globally. The highest national and international medical authorities, with the help of select and scientists, publish false research to justify the adulteration of the basic elements of life with various chemical poisons or biological tweaks that are toxic to reproduction, carcinogenic, mutagenic, and bioaccumulative. The media keep the secret that the matrix of global control is based on genocide and keep the public deceived, confused, and confounded. The judiciary provides legal cover to all governments, entities, and individuals involved in the global depopulation program. And religious authorities delineate the moral limits of this immorality, temper extremists within the system who push for a final solution, and soften the edges of the depopulation genocide. This, in short, is how this program works. The depopulation genocide, of course, works because of secrecy, manipulation, financial incentives to those who contribute, and financial ruin to those who oppose it, and ultimately through brute force that comes first in the form of monetary coercion, and if it fails, then follows military force. The way I see it, and the way any reasonable and straight-thinking person would see it once he or she analyzes the facts, is that the only resolution to this battle can be a global replacement-level fertility law that limits all women or couples to 2 children only from now until the end of times, or until we find and inhabit new planets, which that may never happen. For such a law to come into being, there needs to be full disclosure first and foremost, which is politically risky, to say the least. A global authority, there needs to be a global authority with the mandate to impose and oversee the implementation of such a law worldwide, which is difficult to accomplish in a world of 196 nation states that insist on full sovereignty. So much for depopulation. Globalization, the second battlefront.
Wait a minute, Kevin. Can I I just want to inject here that, you know, I'm having you talk in America. You know, the United States is the worst, isn't it, for this genocide? I mean, in other countries, you've worked and you've gotten them to ban, you know, certain products and take fluoride out of water and all these other things. But the United States is going full force. I mean, it keeps all the poisons in food, the fluoride in the water. The chemtrail spraying is insane over here now.
Yes, the United States is the worst because every method that is conceived to control population is first tried and tested in the United States on the American people. The Americans do this first because they want to show the rest of the world that, you know, they are in the lead. They want to convince the other countries and the leaders of the other 195 nations that are UN member states to adopt the same methodology as the United States. And, you know, they cannot convince them unless they say, well, we've tried it on, we're doing it our own people, so therefore, you know, it works, and you should do it to your people. We've set the pace, so to say. The Americans set the pace and convince, you know, everybody else, because it is one of the forces behind the globalization depopulation program, behind the New World Order, let's say. The other force being Russia. And of course, this is, you know, the media creates this misinformation of this, you know, conflict between the United States and Russia. But the reality is that Russia and the United States have always worked hand in hand closely to maintain this global matrix of control, which is based on covert depopulation and coerced globalization. There are very few misunderstandings or disputes, you know, behind the scenes, and they do not derive from the depopulation program, but from the globalization program. And I'll explain that now.
Russia has banned GMO foods, and Russia, you know, is bitching about the chemtrail spraying and all the vaccines that they give in the United States, poisoning all our children to stable and everybody.
Yes, yet every country has its own methods, and Russia is ahead of everybody else. Russia has accomplished all of its population control targets. That is, it has stabilized the population.
Really?
It has limited lifespan. It is well below what is considered optimal population levels. These are the three, you know, main goals of the population control programs. And Russia is ahead of everybody else. So they may not use the same methods as the West, but they have their own methods, and they have proven to be even more effective. And they are so effective because Russia has always been basically a one-party state or a very, you know, monopolistic kind of political structure that has imposed its will on the people, and they have already accomplished all of their population control. So this
what
is all
possible. What is the population of Russia? How many people are in Russia?
Pardon me?
How many people are in Russia?
About 140 million now, and the population is still decreasing. They're trying now to stabilize it by trying to bring the total fertility rate to 2.1, to replacement level. But they're having difficulties, of course, because the Russians have been poisoned like everybody else for decades and decades. It is now, the total fertility rate is up to 1.9 children per woman, but it's not at 2.1 children per woman. So the population is still decreasing in Russia, and it doesn't look like they're going to succeed to stabilize it, you know, for quite a while. It's still decreasing rapidly. So all of this talk about Russia being, you know, against the New World Order, against the depop program, is complete nonsense. That is not the case. Russia is, I will explain where Russia disagrees with the West, and it's part of the decarbonization battlefront that I talked about. But let me talk about the globalization, the second battlefront, shortly, and then carbonization. you know, globalization has a very bad name nowadays. But what it means, basically, it's the effort to make the world's vital natural resources available to all people and all nations, regardless where they are found, and at a price dictated by supply and demand, not political considerations, so that all people prosper and all nations develop equally, and poverty can become a thing of the past. That is at least the plan behind the globalization push. This globalization battle rages within and between nations. Within nations, the globalization battle rages between the wealthy on the one side and the lower and middle classes on the other. And between nations, the globalization battle rages between developed and developing nations. And this battle is essentially a battle between corporations and governments, between economics, politics, and between globalists and nationalists, because it involves a shift as who controls resources. It's no longer, can no longer be allowed to be in the hands of nation states and the political class of each individual nation. That that control over resources had to be transferred to multinational corporations, so that these resources can be distributed across the world at the same price without discrimination and so on. So this system of globalization by coercion, which has triggered the largest concentrations of wealth in history, so as to make possible the transfer of capital and manufacturing capacity from the developed to the developing world, was enshrined basically in the international system from the beginning of the UN, but did not begin until the 1980s. And ever since, the coerced program of globalization constitutes the second wheel of the axis that makes up the matrix of global control. I have said the other wheel being the program of covert depopulation. How does this work? How does the globalization program work? Well, all nation states are tied to a global monetary system that uses the U.S. dollar as the currency of national trade, open markets to make raw materials and manufactured goods available to all nations at a price dictated by supply and demand, a set of rules that govern international trade, and the few international organizations that settle disputes between nations when and if they arise. And those nations do not allow multinational corporations to access, extract, and export raw materials, and who do not play by the rules, are just shut out of international trade and therefore starved of vital raw materials. The program of coerced globalization works due to the military might of the U.S., which keeps all international trade channels open, and due to the fact that no single nation has all the resources it needs, since vital natural resources are unequally distributed across the planet. And as such, it forces every nation to collaborate and cooperate with the entire international community in order to access the resources it does not have.
The United States just goes and overthrows countries and steals all the resources. How are they going to stop the United States?
The United States keeps the channels of trade, of international trade, open, and facilitates this transfer of control over resources from the political class of each and every nation to multinational corporations. That's its role, but it does not steal. It just keeps this, enforces this system, because of course nobody wants to give up control over their natural resources. Yet in a world where we have no new continents to discover, resources are already scarce, the population continues to grow, and there is more and more competition for these natural resources, there has to be, a rule-based system of how these resources are shared. So, but the way I see the resolution to this battle, this battle of resources, is the gradual elimination of the nation state, or at the very least, the cessation of national authority to international organs, as well as a single and therefore global currency. Until such institutional infrastructure exists, there's this battle, this competition and this conflict over resources that is going to continue in a world divided by 196 nation states, each with its own petty interests. Last but not least, the decarbonization front. This is the latest battlefront that has opened, and it has opened because mankind has become such a force that is equal to any force in nature, and we're changing everything. We're destroying the natural habitat, the environment, polluting, and so on. And what is decarbonization? why is it needed? Well, decarbonization is simply the effort to transfer an energy grid dependent on fossil fuels, to say on oil, gas, and coal, to one based on renewable energy sources such as wind, solar, hydro, geothermal, radiant energy, and biomass. And this decarbonization battle rages between nations that are rich in fossil fuels and whose economy depends on their export, and nations that want to move away from fossil fuels to save the environment and to gain energy independence. And OPEC nations, as well as Russia and Venezuela, want the world to keep using fossil fuels because they have so many, and their economies are totally dependent on exporting these fossil fuels. Whereas the rest of the world want a sustainable energy grid. And here is where Russia diverges from the United States. This is why there is a conflict now between Russia and the United States. This the system of decarbonization that was agreed to by consensus is being sabotaged by economic forces whose interests are vested in fossil fuels and by the nations that depend on fossil fuels. And Russia, of course, is the most powerful nation that depends entirely on fossil fuels. More than 70% of Russia's national income is derived from the sale of oil and gas.
Really?
And the only resolution that I see to this battle is a united global community, so that a one world, so to say, where taxes are centrally collected and globally redistributed. Because you see how fiercely Russia fights for the preservation of this energy grid that depends on fossil fuels. It is there, of course, it is a matter of survival for Russia. It is for OPEC nations. And there can be no decarbonization unless there's a way figured out of how to make sure that the rug is not pulled from under the feet of these nations that depend entirely on the sale of fossil fuels. And that is partly why we have such a big mess in the Middle East now, because they're preparing the Middle East for a fossil fuel-free energy grid. And basically the entire Middle East depends on oil exports. That, in short, is the three global battlefronts and battles that we have to fight and we have to win. And however you look at it, these three global battlefronts cannot be resolved, if you want. There can be no peace on either front unless there is global cooperation. And that is something the nationalists and populists don't get. They don't realize it because they don't understand the system. They just look at the problems of their own countries, you know, from their own communities, from their individual level and so on. They think they can hide behind borders and everything is going to be fine by just simply going back to the past, to national governments, tight national borders and no migration flows, no resource sharing and so on. It's a pipe dream. Such a system, if we were to revert to such a system of national protectionism, the entire world will collapse within 5 years. There will be mayhem everywhere.
Right.
So
right.
Why am I going to Brussels? Now that your listeners have an idea of what our generation faces, because we face the biggest problems ever, but we also have the best tools and knowledge and technology to be able to solve these problems. And I'm confident that we are solving these problems. And for instance, on the decarbonization front, there is there's tremendous progress. Many Western European countries already have, their energy grids derive more than 50% of their energy from renewables. And is a huge accomplishment in a very, very short time. And the process has just started. Now it is really picking up. But Brussels, why am I going to Brussels? Why am I taking on NATO? The chemtrailing program, the so-called engineering program, is entirely under the control of NATO. That is something that is that, you know, all these NGOs and these groups that are out there that are purportedly fighting geoengineering fail to mention. And they fail to mention because they are system controlled. And anything that is system controlled is designed to simply keep people, you know, in limbo, turning around in circles, accomplishing absolutely nothing, just sort of nipping at the heels of the beast, but failing to go for its throat. And this is where I come in. I go for the throat. Right. Just as I went for the throat of the of one of the obstacles that stood in the way for, you know, the abandonment of covert methods of depopulation, which was the doctrines of the Catholic Church, right, prevented the use of contraceptives. Now I'm going for the throat of NATO. And I'm going to strangle NATO and hit them where it hurts. Until they stop chemtrailing us. Or at the very least, if the world ascertains that the geoengineering program needs to continue because we have no other way of slowing down global warming and environmental catastrophe, then it has to be controlled. We have to know what is going on. We have to know what is being sprayed on us, what the consequences of this spraying could be, how we could mitigate negative consequences, because there are negative consequences, and we have to make sure that this program is not used for other purposes, which is currently the case, because none of these geopolitical fixes of these global programs have a single objective. They have multiple objectives, and in the case of geoengineering, there are two major objectives, and multiple minor ones. The two major objectives are, first, obviously, mitigating or slowing down climate global warming by creating these albedo effects, these artificial clouds. But secondly, is to increase the presence of heavy metals.
Your connection's not coming through real good.
Yes, I'm realizing this. I don't know what we can do about it, however.
Well, it's okay. But you know what's so bad about the United States? The United States, they're so mind-controlled here. They don't even realize chemtrail spraying is happening.
You'd be surprised.
We have a dome over the United States.
First of all, the problem is universal. It's not just in the United States, but people fail to acknowledge this or to admit it to themselves. However, the fact that people fail to acknowledge this is somewhat exaggerated. A good proportion of the population already is very much aware of this. And of course, especially people who live in highly industrialized nations, which, by the way, this is where the most spraying happens. Why does it happen there the most? Because they have to mitigate for the greenhouse gases that they pump into the atmosphere. So the more industrialized the nation is, the more they have to chemtrail the skies in order to compensate for the damage they do. That is the rule. That is why the United States and Germany, for instance, which are, you know, the most industrialized nations on the planet, that's where the most chemtrailing happens. In a country like Romania, for instance, which is no longer industrialized because ever since communism fell apart, all industry has moved out, or all the industries have been shut down, and everything is manufactured abroad and then being imported into the country. So here you see chemtrails, you know, every now and then, to compensate basically for the two remaining coal-burning power plants that are pumping, you know, quite a bit of CO2 into the atmosphere, and Romania has to compensate for that. That is the rule of thumb. The more you pollute, the more greenhouse gases you pump into the air because you are industrialized, the more you have to chemtrail the skies to compensate for the damage you cause. So the United States, the Americans see that a lot because America is a very industrialized nation, and it pumps a lot of CO2 into the atmosphere. Germany, the same thing. So I'm going for NATO's throat. NATO is in charge. Of course, I mean, none of these organizations, these so-called geoengineering organizations, mention this. Why? Because they always protect the head. They just, they're just going around, you know, trying to get people to challenge the geoengineering program in court. You know, in the United States, you have various attempts to ban geoengineering over the skies of particular states. Because they can spray, you know, 500 miles away, and the drift will bring it over your state, nevertheless.
I know.
And that's exactly what is happening. You know, any kind of bans, there are court bans that are just state by state or even country by country are completely useless. They have absolutely no effect whatsoever.
Tell people what's in this chemtrail spraying. Tell my listeners what's in this chemtrail spraying.
Well, there are basically two things that they're spraying. First of all, there's coal ash. And this is why you have all these heavy metals that are being measured, you know, the barium, the strontium, the aluminum, and so on, because that is what you find in coal ash. But secondly, and most worrying, is that they spray Welsbach materials, which are radioactive. But these Welsbach materials are needed because they basically, imagine, it's like unzipping the skies, the atmosphere. By spraying those in the upper atmosphere, it's like unzipping the atmosphere, and all of a sudden the heat trapped can escape. That's basically the principle. But these Welsbach materials are very radioactive, and eventually they fall to the ground, and it's not good for us. And I have a feeling that they are, you know, another purpose of this, of the spraying of these Welsbach materials, is a way to get rid of radioactive waste, of nuclear waste, and especially waste produced by the nuclear arsenal of the big powers, who, right, you know, they retire these old bombs, and they take this depleted uranium and God knows what else, and they have nowhere to put it, nowhere to store it, because nobody wants it in their backyard. And any attempt that has been tried, you know, to create this these huge storage facilities deep underground has been rejected by the people of these particular nations, or by the people, you know, in the area. So they're using the geoengineering program also as a way to basically get rid of nuclear waste. And that is, of course, a big problem, because God knows what consequences there will be. But it's in the eyes of the of this system, which says, you know, that everything they do has to be, the burden has to be spread globally. If they take this radioactive material, these Welsbach materials, whatever there is, and they spray them in the skies, then everybody is affected by it. Therefore, it's a democratic way of dealing with the problem, if you want. If nobody wants this nuclear waste, then, well, everybody's going to get it, but in very small quantities, because we're spraying it, you know, in the atmosphere, and it's going to be equally distributed all over the planet. And of accepting, you know, of particular nations or people accepting this nuclear waste in their backyard is solved. And at the same time, of course, they solve, you know, the problem of the of global warming and the problem, of course, the biggest problem they have, which is the population still growing, and now they need to, in this last stage of the demographic transition, which has been reached by all developed nations, where you have these inverted population pyramids with too many old people and too few young people, they need to get rid of the old, of the baby boom generation. So that's the other main objective of the geoengineering program. They increase the presence of heavy metals in the atmosphere, and that weakens the immune system and speeds up neurodegenerative illnesses, and that's why you have Alzheimer's and early onset dementia and so on. So they get rid of the old faster. You combine that with flu vaccines, which are administered to the old as well, and, you know, you propel them faster into the grave, into the graves. And this is what they're doing, and they need to do this, because if they're not doing this, the burden of the old will grow from 25%, which is where it is at now. About 25% of the people of the developing world is retirement age. By 2050, so in just a few decades, they will be 50 to 60%, depending on the country. 50 to 60% of the population would be over 65 years of age. No country, regardless how rich, how wealthy it is, can possibly support this kind of an old age dependency burden. So this is what they're doing. This is the solution they have found. And chemtrailing is used for that as well. And I say, no, you know, we don't have to do this. If they legislate, for instance, assisted suicide, then the problem of you know, living beyond the ability of society to sustain life is solved, because I have talked to many, many old couples, old people, and most of them, their concern is, you know, who's going to die first, the husband or the wife, and nobody wants to die first, and even if there is a possibility of limiting your life, you know, to what is acceptable and control over when your life comes to an end, I'm sure many people will avail themselves of this opportunity, as it is the case indeed in countries where such laws exist, like Holland, for instance. And once people are explained what the situation is, there will come into play also this, you know, the responsibility that the older generations have. You know, what is the purpose of keeping, let's say, you know, an 80-year-old through modern medicine and, you know, very expensive procedures and a lot of drugs can be kept alive for another 10 years, but at a tremendous cost to society, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, whatever currency you're looking at, and that money is basically robbed or taken away from, you know, from the young, from education, from social services, and so on, from other things. And once the math is brought into the open, and people see that, you know, every expenditure that the government has comes with a cost, because if you pay the money here, you have to deprive, you know, other sectors of society of that money. The resources that every government receives are limited. Of course, no country can possibly support a old age dependency burden of 50% to 60% of the population. That's just impossible. Already in throughout the West, for instance, the median age is above 40. In the EU, the median age is 43. In Russia, really? it is 40, but in white Russia, it is around 45. In the U.S., it is 38. In Germany, it is 45 already. And in Japan, it is 48. Japan is already a country of old people, which is why the population is collapsing so fast. The EU, for instance, shrinks by 2 million people every year without immigration. That's 0.4% fewer people every year in the continent, the European continent, at a time when already you have over 25% of the population above 65. You have a median age of 43, so everybody's over the hill, basically. You have the population shrinking by 2 million a year. Imagine, it's a complete nightmare. You know, governments don't know how to deal with this. But this was set in motion, this program of controlling population, of stopping the population from growing, in 1945 when the United Nations was formed, and now we are reaping, you know, the crops of this program over multiple generations, because they've interfered with fertility. Now we have these inverted population pyramids with too many old people, too few young people at the bottom of the pyramid, and too few working people to support these increasing dependency burdens. And that is a problem that you cannot run away from, and that irrespective of what government comes in, whether it is a, you know, a socialist government or a populist one, or a right or a left, or a conservative or progressive, is completely irrelevant. These problems are inherited, are immutable, they will be there. They would have to be dealt with by regardless what government or what political color that government has.
But how are you going to deal with all these world leaders and the UN and everything, with all the world leaders running this pedophile network?
Well,
you know, evil and immoral.
I say to people this, you know, they are poisoning us all into extinction.
Yeah.
7.3 billion people. Do you think they're going to give a damn about a few children or a few adults? Do they give a damn about my children? They've taken away my children 6 years ago. I have not seen my children. They still have a ban, an interdiction where I cannot even communicate directly or indirectly with my children. I don't even know if my children are alive. And it's completely illegal, of course.
That's what they do to truth tellers. They destroy their families.
Excuse me?
I said that's what they do to truth tellers.
Yes. Yes, so do you think they care about a few children? And of course, this is, you know, there are a few sick people within the system, of course, and they have privileged positions and they abuse their privileged position. But this is not, you know, one of the purposes of the system. This system has benevolent intentions. The people at the United Nations have benevolent intentions. They want to solve the global problems that mankind faces, that are existential problems, that unless they are solved, they spell the end for all of us. They don't go into these positions and belong to these circles because they are pedophiles. No, there are a few bad apples among them, and of course, they are already in privileged positions and they're untouchables because they're privy to these secrets. And once you are in the inner circle, and you know that you are part of the depopulation lobby that is poisoning the rest of mankind and therefore committing genocide, obviously they can't turn on each other, on one another, because if those who are responsible for the crime of molesting children will say, well, no, you turn on me, okay, I'm going to spill the beans on you being part of poisoning humanity into extinction. So that's why they cover each other's backs. And the whole system is rigged in such a way as to, as I have explained, as to hide this global genocide. But this global genocide happens not because of malevolent intentions. It happens because we cannot survive the next doubling from 7 billion to 14 billion. We can
I think in the United States, people should accept this depopulation agenda and that they're poisoning us with we have the sickest generation in this country in history. I mean,
yes, and it'll get worse and worse because the damage done by this multi-generational poisoning program, which is sublethal,
right,
but nevertheless a poisoning program, is cumulative. I've said that a million times before, right, and I'm repeating it again. That is, from generation to generation, the damage is more and more visible, more and more extensive. Already,
in
this generation, the kids born now, you have, what is it, one in 60 or 70 now who is autistic? Or has attention deficit syndrome, or have now some 10 to 13% in some countries children get cancer. 30% of children, just about throughout the Western world, suffer from diabetes or pre-diabetes.
Right.
The same number percentage are obese or overweight. I mean, these are just terrifying statistics. To take Japan has the most terrifying statistics. At least in terms of fertility, 40% of the young people, 30 year olds, 40% of the Japanese population, of the young people, have not even had sex, let alone are they capable of procreation. They have turned the entire population of Japan and the rest of the Western world into asexual human beings. That is to say, human beings incapable of reproduction. Not only are they incapable of reproduction, are not even interested in reproduction, because they have been turned asexual. No, they have no interest whatsoever in sex. The procreation drive, the reproductive drive or instinct, has been shattered. That does not happen in nature. In nature, there are two instincts that are the most powerful and that dictate everything else. There is the survival instinct, and then there is the reproductive instinct. Life has no purpose unless it can reproduce. Life exists only to perpetuate life. Humanity now is being turned into a species that is incapable of reproduction. That means the end of these genetic lineages. People don't get this. See, people do not see
it.
Unless a threat is immediate, people do not react to it. Most human beings are only react to things that they can see with their senses, with their five senses.
But why can't see it or see smell it with their sick kids? I mean, we pay them, in the United States, we pay the most for health care of any country in the world, and we have the worst.
And I'm the sickest people in the Western world, yes, because the entire medical system, public health and medicine have been turned into handmaidens of genocide. I gave a speech about this at an international medical conference.
I listened to that today.
In Valencia, and you posted it when you advertised in our upcoming this interview. And there I explain how medicine and public health have been turned into handmaidens of genocide, which, by the way, which is why now vaccines are being pushed on the population and they're being mandated. They're being mandated why? Because I forced them to stop the chemical poisoning through these endocrine disruptors, these depopulation poisons, 300 of them.
But they're still here in the U.S., the endocrine disruptors.
This is throughout the world. These depopulation poisons have been identified. Industry has received notice that they have until 2018 to register. They have been put on a list of substances of very high concern. And by 2020, they will start replacing them or removing them. So, in other words, the depopulation by chemicals is stopping. But since they have not legislated limits to fertility, they're trying to replace depopulation by chemicals, by chemical poisoning, with depopulation by vaccination to buy some time.
Right. So they are forcing parents to poison their own children.
This is why mandated vaccines all of a sudden.
Right. They are forcing parents to poison their own children in this country just so they can go to school.
Well, they're not poisoning their children because they can say, you see, they control the medical system and they are in positions of authority. So they can say, you know, write in the papers in their vaccination record that their children have been vaccinated when they haven't been vaccinated.
No,
or they get vaccines that are safe. And our children, the vast majority, are getting vaccines that are unsafe, that have this dual purpose of you know, lending some kind of immunity, you know, whether real or fictitious, against this or the other disease, while at the same time either causing sterility or damaging the immune system, so as to control life at both ends, births and deaths. That is why they are pushing, they're mandating that is why they're so desperate to violate, you know, parental rights to decide, to violate the all manner of conventions which give people the right to refuse any kind of medical treatment. And that's why they're coming up with bogus notions that, you know, we're compromising herd immunity by not being vaccinated. It's complete nonsense. An idiot can ascertain that, you know, somebody who's not vaccinated, let's say, doesn't have immunity against a particular disease, he will, or she will get sick, but cannot possibly infect people who are already vaccinated and purportedly immune. They've been rendered immune to that particular disease through vaccine. So obviously you cannot compromise herd immunity by not vaccinating yourself. You're compromising your own immunity, perhaps, and that's about it, which is your own right.
But the
arguments that they have are complete bogus arguments because they cannot possibly have logical arguments. There's not absolutely nothing logical about the program of population control. It is a desperate attempt to save us from self-destruction.
Well, parents in this country should think for a minute. We have so many mandatory
vaccines.
Before you're six in this country, why don't parents figure this out? If these vaccines work so good, why are our kids sicker than ever?
Evelyn, the problem that humanity has is that the vast majority of people have never been capable of thinking for themselves. Beings are herd animals. Okay. Okay. The human beings have always been led by the very few, not even 10%, perhaps not even 1%.
Right.
It's always very few individuals who have led the herd. It is the same today. The vast majority of people are not capable of thinking for themselves. They will never be capable of thinking for themselves. The entire education system is not that it is flawed, but it just passes knowledge that has been created by some brilliant minds, passes on to the next generation. People are capable of learning knowledge that has been conceived, created by some brilliant minds, but that's about it. They're just regurgitating this knowledge. But the vast majority of the people, that is the brutal truth, are not capable of thinking for themselves. They're not even willing to think for themselves, let alone capable.
Right.
So we cannot hope, you know, change has never come from the masses. You know, I'm going to be criticized to hell and back for saying this, but this is the truth. My job and my function and that I have chosen for myself, because it's a job that nobody else wants and nobody else does in this world, or very few people do, is to tell people what they need to know, not what they want to hear. For the very reason we have this system of genocide, which is you know, one of the wheels of this axis of global control, is because people are being told what they want to hear and not what right. they need to know. That is how the deception, how this deceptive system has survived for 70 years, since 1945.
Right.
The deception is coming to an end now, not because the masses are awakening or because the masses, the vast majority of people can think for themselves. Not only can they not think for themselves, they don't even want to think for themselves. I go to this gym here in Romania. It's full of, you know, of intelligent women mostly and men. But right. even among this, you know, so let's say privileged, you know, educated slice of society, the vast majority of them don't even want to hear it. They right. don't even want to entertain, you know, the existence of such a program, or they don't even want to know how the world around them operates, even though they have a feeling that they are at the receiving end, that they are victimized in a way. They don't want to know, because they don't want to think
people,
for themselves.
People say, how do I know all these things? You know, how do I know? I spend 12 or 18 hours a day researching this stuff every day.
I've come to this realization, Evelyn, okay? You cannot force people to do anything. There's free will. For better or worse, the depopulationists are eliminating the idiots from the face of this planet. And it's a very harsh thing to say, but it is the truth. Because the knowledge now necessary to protect yourself and your family is there. Just my work alone provides that in abundance. My work is freely available. There is no excuse whatsoever. You go online nowadays, you go on Facebook, and within 5 minutes you're going to come across material about the depopulation program. It dominates just about every discussion now.
The
social media and the alternative
good information.
Media.
And
so
everything,
people,
you know, that I posted it all the time, you know, and I have you on the show. I mean, these people, the listeners, they need to listen to what you're telling them. I mean, the question how I know everything, I tell you, you know how I know everything. I'm saying I research constantly on these topics
you have
that
to keep
I tell
your eyes
people
open.
About.
Now, everything you see in the world, you have to weigh and analyze through the prism of these three major problems that are issues, battlefronts that I've outlined: the depopulation battlefront, the globalization battlefront, and the decarbonization battlefront. Everything is related to this, one way or another. And once you have this, you know, big picture, then you can know exactly where a particular incident fits in, because the media, they report incidents, but they report everything out of context, and so that nobody can understand or know exactly where it fits in, unless you're part of the system at the very top and you know exactly, because you're privy to privileged information. But everybody is now privy to privileged information, because we know now the material I put out there leaves absolutely no secret unexposed. We know every method they use now of population
right.
control.
And if people would just go up there and do their own research like you, all they have to do is go on YouTube and punch in Kemp or depopulation agenda, and it'll come
up. Now it's available in one place, at stopdepop.org, www.stopdepop.org. My website now is up and running, and all the material is available there for free.
Okay, well, thank you, Kevin, for coming on again. I'm so proud to have you on, that you're willing to come on.
Thank you for having me, Evelyn. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I'll have you on again soon if you're willing.
Yes, because I will be in Brussels, and I'll be giving interviews every day.
Okay, we'll see you then. Thanks. Okay. Well, goodbye, people. We'll see you next week. I can't walk on water. I can't save your sons and daughters.